Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends. You're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist, and you can find us online at speculist.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T.com. Or go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we are all about a convergence of emerging technologies and emerging possibilities, which are at the heart of this, the greatest period of transformation in human history. Our world is changing in ways that are hard to predict, sometimes even hard to imagine. And Fast Forward Radio is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead and that will be here sooner than you think. And we produce this show weekly, and we produce shows that range from the mildly awesome to the extremely awesome. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and extremely awesome co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. I hope you're awesome tonight as well.
Extremely.
Great. Well, man, we've got a fun show lined up for tonight. This is this is something we never do, by the way. We never celebrate our geekiness on Fast Forward Radio, but we're gonna make an
exception
tonight.
Yeah, it's a real
tonight.
A real departure tonight. We're gonna talk about things that are a little geeky, not necessarily all that hip and cool. A little more on the geeky side tonight, just to explore that side because we can be pretty wide ranging. Actually, before the show started, I was saying that it reminds me of that old cliche, when the kid says to the mom or the dad, "Hey, how come there's a Mother's Day and a Father's Day, but there is no Children's Day?" The answer is always, "Well, every day is Children's Day, right?" I'm sure every child has heard that from a parent at some point in their life. And the truth is, every
somehow
day
it's non-convincing to a kid. I remember being not very much nonplussed by that answer when I was a kid.
Well, every day's Mom and Dad Day. You get to stay up late, and
exactly. <right?
laughs> But we digress.
Exactly.
Every day is Geek Day here at the Speculist, but today we're going to celebrate that. And actually, got the idea for this from one of your tweets. You had linked to an article over on CNN Living called "Geeks: Smart, Harmless, Authentic, Exploited," which I thought that was great. Go for the dramatic angle, but it turns out what was it? Yesterday, actually. Oh, we're not 2 days off. We're only a day off. Yesterday was Embrace Your Geekness Day, and it says in the article that Wall Street embraced geeks by letting them ring the starting bell at the New York Stock Exchange on Tuesday morning. And if you go to the story, follow the link from Stephen's tweet, it's actually a bunch of folks from the Geek Squad, which is a really interesting concept when you think about it, that there's a group of people called the Geek Squad in the world we live in today. It actually says an awful lot about the kind of changes that our world is going through, that this group not only exists, but that they apparently are doing very well, that their business model is working quite well for them, and they're very well liked. I've never heard anyone say anything bad about the Geek Squad.
Well, I remember, and I was a geek, when being a geek was something that, you tried not to be, I was a geek when being a geek was not cool, Phil. I don't know about you, my friend, but That was something you called somebody when you didn't, care for them or they were not, Anyway, that's the deal.
Definitely, I was too. I've been borderline nerd and a geek my entire life. Now we've got our own definition of how you distinguish a geek from a nerd, but I was interested in the definition of a geek that was provided by. Now I got to find the guy's name.
You're talking about the Anne Hovell of CNN?
She was interviewing Scott Kaufman, the CEO of GeekNet.
Ah, yeah.
And let's see if he gives the definition here. People are getting in touch with their inner geekdom, and that can take the form of many different kinds of passions or obsessions. I used to be a sports fan or a sports nut. Now it's a geek, he said. Geek mainstreaming began decades ago, said Nugent, when Star Wars and Lord of the Rings books burst onto the scene to unprecedented popularity. Science fiction and fantasy, once the bastions of geek and nerd culture, became huge entertainment moneymakers thereafter, he said. Now, this I can recall. When I was in junior high and early high school, there was nothing in the world nerdier than science fiction. And
yeah.
Star Wars came out, and it was okay to go see that movie. But if you enjoyed science fiction in any other format, you were still an incredible geek. And you know, the transformation of our popular culture around that kind of stuff over the last 25, 30 years is really really pretty spectacular.
Well, I mean, just think of any really huge hit movie or series of movies. Just you know, there's a geek overlay on most things. I mean, the Harry Potter movies. I mean, that's pretty geeky. That stuff's pretty geeky. And of course, you know, the old standbys of Star Trek just got rebooted, and I thought they did a good job on that. And you know, Star Wars is apparently they've completed it for a while, but they're coming out with a comedy series. Did you hear this, Phil?
No.
Yes, there's going to be apparently George Lucas is developing a comedy series, a Star Wars comedy series with the Robot Chicken guys. Could
awesome.
Be interesting. Could be interesting. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you've seen either of the Robot Chicken send-ups of Star Wars.
Yeah, I've seen them all, I think.
Oh,
they're hilarious.
Man.
I love the one where Palpatine gets the call about the Death Star being blown up. You know?
Yeah, we've actually had that one on the Speculous. That is
one of my
favorite. That is one of my favorite movies of all time, I have to say. That I think I enjoyed that more than most of the movies in the Star Wars series.
that phone call. That one phone call
so
he had.
Great. Go for Papa Palpatine. You know. Well, what's funny is I think that works a lot better for you if you know people like that who are like that on the phone, right? If you've ever been one of the guys sitting there drinking milk having it come out of his nose, listening to this guy talk on the phone, it's just so perfect. And you just to juxtapose that character with Star Wars is just brilliant. But I mean, they must be telling the story. They can't just continually do send ups of the existing movies. There must be
no. It's apparently it's going to be a new story. So I don't know if it'll be quite as funny as what they're working on. But you know, I don't want to prejudge. I'll take a look at it.
Once it shows up on Cartoon Network, I'll definitely check that out. Well, here I found the quote I was looking for, and it's actually from Benjamin Nugent, author of American Nerd: The Story of My People, which is a book I think we should check out. He says, a geek is a nerd who is defined by his knowledge on a certain subject. Nugent points out that this is a far cry from what the word geek used to mean, a carny who was so unskilled that all he or she could do was bite the heads off live animals. That is the original origin of geek. They also were people who did self-mutilating kind of acts, right? They would stick pins or needles into themselves or nails into their head or something like that. They were people who possessed no skills whatsoever but still made a marginal living off the carnival. So the word originally means, I'm going to say, the very bottom of the social stratum, right? I mean, you can't get any lower
than a geek.
As it was originally defined. Because, I mean, you think about it, and I mean, no offense to any carnies who might be listening, but at least in those less enlightened times, just carnival people themselves were not viewed as maybe the most socially desirable gang to hang with, right?
Smelled of cabbage, you know, small
hands. Small hands, exactly. And so here you've got, right, the very bottom of that barrel, okay? That's what a geek is, okay? This is the person that the other carnies don't even want to hang with. That's where the term comes from. Who did it get applied to? Well, it got applied to people who I think are also called nerds. Now, he says that geek means that you have a special body of knowledge. I think nerds have that special. I've never known a nerd who didn't know a lot of stuff. It seems to me like you have to be, you have to possess a certain corpus of knowledge in order to be classified as a nerd. But we're not going to quibble, right, over definitions.
Right.
We get the idea. And, there, you know, there's nerds and there's geeks. There's people who, the cool kids, manage to enhance their status by making sure that everyone understood how far from having any status these people were. That's who we're talking about. So why would we celebrate being that? Why would we have a day to say, hey, let's be that? And why would you and I, Stephen, week after week, come out and do a show where we now say is always about that? How did we turn that corner? What's happened in the world?
Well, I think a big part of it is that those who have been classified as geeks in the past have in many ways taken over the world. I mean, Bill Gates is a good example. Steve Jobs is maybe a slightly cooler version of the same type of person. But I mean, these people have changed the world in many ways and have become fabulously wealthy in doing so. I mean, some of the biggest movers and shakers in our society now are just unabashed geeks, and being a geek is not the worst thing in the world anymore. I mean, you can't hardly compare Bill Gates with a carny. I mean, there's just not, there's not much similarity between the two anymore. There's the obsession still, but obsession's a cool thing now, I guess. Having something that is a passion that you can really spend time with and enjoy. I mean, that's the basis of being a geek, and it's not a bad thing, I wouldn't think.
Well, DC in the chat room says that interesting anecdote here. Glenn Beck said that geeks were going to rule the world, and Kurzweil responded that they already have, in case he hadn't noticed. and I think there's an awful lot of truth to that. It's this shift in social viability due to economic viability that the computer revolution has brought about. If you're a somewhat introverted, technology-friendly person who likes to learn systems and get into them and make sense of them and make them do things, that's a viable set of skills in the economy that we've been living in for the last few decades. And it's paid off handsomely for geeks. I remember it was an article in Wired, probably mid-90s, talking about this very phenomenon, talking about how suddenly you couldn't just count out people because they weren't cool, because suddenly the people who weren't cool had all the economic clout. I mean, they were, as you said, changing the world. And the title of that article was Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah,
and I think
we're getting all upset. Hey, they're using the word wrong.
Yeah, no, we'll use them interchangeably. Now you and I know the difference, and that is a geek is a slightly more socially functioning nerd. That's how I like to use the term.
I just a link to the geek nerd dork dweeb continuum.
Is it a Venn diagram?
Yes, it is. It's awesome. You need to check it out. I just threw it up in the chat room, the link to it. But I mean, basically, there's one big circle for intelligence, another overlapping circle for social ineptitude, and a third overlapping circle for obsession. Okay, so where intelligence and obsession meet, that's geek. Where social ineptitude and obsession meet, that's a dork. Where intelligence and social aptitude meet, that's a dweeb. Now, when all three meet, intelligence, social ineptitude, and obsession meet, that's a nerd.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. They bring it all together.
And the fact that I just explained that, that was me being a geek, I think, or something.
I think so. And thank you for that. That's what we're paying you for here, is to do exactly that kind of thing. Well, you think about we've talked about how geeks are celebrated in our culture in ways they haven't been. I mean, even just in the last few years, we've talked about the TV show Big Bang Theory, which I think is kind of a cultural turning point. I think this is like mainstream recognition of the fact that geeks are among us, and that they are us, and that we can sympathize with them and view them as part of our species now, and people that we want to identify with and whose lives are interesting to us. Those guys, how would you classify them? Actually, by my definition, probably. Let's go through the list. We'll start with Sheldon. He's a nerd, right?
Yeah, definitely a nerd. He is very intelligent, probably the smartest one of the group.
Yep.
He certainly thinks so. And he's socially inept. That's obvious. And he's definitely obsessed. Yes, he's all three. He's
all three. He's a nerd. Yeah. And by my definition, he's a nerd too, because he just can't quite relate to people, right? You know, I mean, he's not prime time ready for like interacting with other people most of the time. So
like the time he melted down in that when he was giving that speech, you know, ended up on YouTube apparently. So.
This whole thing about down. Where his pants ended up. Yes, that's
right.
That's right. Okay, yeah, so Sheldon's nerd. All right, let's go to Leonard.
Leonard is slightly less intelligent, but still very very smart. And he's not quite as he does not have quite the same social ineptitude. Dating Penny, for example. Obsession. What's his great obsession? I don't know.
Oh, he. You know what? He obsesses for sure. Do you remember the Time Machine episode?
Ah, yes. Okay, all right. So
he obsesses with the best of them. He's definitely got that one down. But you're right. It seems they've curbed. In his case, his social skills have been notched up a bit, and his intelligence may be taken down a tweak or two. Not that he's by any stretch of the imagination dumb, but you know, not as smart as Sheldon. Okay, now the other two are very important because you've got Wolowitz, who I think is my favorite character. I think one of the most brilliant.
Hey,
characters
I need to ask you this.
TV.
Yeah, I need to ask you this. Do you think Wolowitz's mother is voiced by Wolowitz?
I think so, yes. Actually, I think so. Yeah, I think that's the same person talking, yeah. Good call.
All they
Although,
do is
I knew a kid like that. And I knew a kid like that in high school whose mom sounded like that, you know?
They just scream back and forth at each other. It's hilarious. I love that.
Okay, so Howard, here's an interesting thing. Now let's do it. He's
Howard. Okay.
He's intelligent, but he's lacking credentials.
Yeah.
Right? Because he's only got a master's degree compared to the rest who have doctorates. Now, Howard is obsessive, but his obsessive is actually over in the social structure, right? He wants women, right? He's all about he's all about picking up girls,
with absolutely no skill whatsoever. You know,
and
you just want to help him. You just want to help him. You know, you want to be his wingman, Howard. You need to really get, you know. Oh man, poor guy.
Yeah. He just like. Okay, change clothes, but whatever you do, just be quiet, okay? Those would be like your two pieces of advice to him. But you know what? He doesn't need that advice because there's something missing from the Venn diagram, and I think this is key, and this is why I actually went through this list, and this is the difference between Wolowitz and Kuptrapali, Raj, the stark difference between the two of them. Raj is actually quite good-looking, right? And would do well with the ladies, probably, if given the opportunity, but he can't talk to them. He's got such an advanced case of shyness or social anxiety that he literally can't talk when women are around. So he's unable to function in that way. And of course, there's all these stories about how when he drinks, then he can talk to women. But Howard, on the other hand, he's got a characteristic that I think is extremely important on the whole geek, nerd, dweeb, whatever spectrum, and I think got left out. And that is just complete confidence, just utter self-assuredness that
without any basis whatsoever.
No basis, in fact. But he is convinced he's God's gift to women. And you think about it. I mean, Sheldon has the same thing. He's convinced that he's the the smartest guy in the room. But he usually is the smartest guy in the room. Whereas Howard, you know, I mean, is not God's gift to women. You know, unless God is perpetrating some kind of incredibly cruel joke. but he's completely convinced that he is, and I've noticed that this is a characteristic that I think they're very astute in writing this. This is something that you see in highly functioning, highly successful geeks. These are people who have limitless confidence, in addition to the obsession and possibly lacking social skills. We look at somebody like Steve Jobs, right?
Right.
Or
that's
Gates.
A man who he believes that he can change the world, and And he does. He does all the time. So, I mean, lately Apple's been struggling a little bit. It's been a terrible week for Apple this week. But, yeah, I mean, Steve Jobs is, has over and over just done remarkable things. And so, I guess part of it's just he's confident he can.
Yeah, he just knows that he's right. And just that absolute certainty, as dangerous as that is, in the wrong hands, is also this incredible ability to accomplish things. It's been translated into for a lot of geeks. So I just wanted to point that out. Plus, of course, we got to geek out talking about one of our favorite TV shows for a moment too. But that's what we do here. So let's talk a little bit about our own lives as geeks. What do you think? Give me a geeky fact about yourself, Stephen. Either a personal story that shows your geeky side, or you know, one of your favorite geeky possessions, or just geeky pastime. Give me some geek here.
All right. Well, I've got a pretty extensive comic collection. Let's see what else I could tell you. I play Dungeons and Dragons every week. That's pretty geeky.
Wow.
That's pretty.
That's advanced.
I've actually written a role playing system.
I believe you've written more than one.
I actually have. And
not to out you here, but how many different role playing games have you written now, Stephen?
Well, one wargaming system, and one, and actually two, role playing systems. One that's finished and one that's sort of in. You know, it's been put aside for a little while. But anyway, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, once you get into that, and you know, here's kind of a interesting geek fact about myself. Not only enjoy, you know, playing these games, but I can sit down with a really well-written system and just sit there and geek out about, oh, man, yeah, this is cool, the way this system functions and takes care of this problem and that problem, and I can... you know, work through the system in my brain as I'm reading it. I like that. You know, I could sit there and read like a manual for a game, like it was a novel. I mean, that's pretty geeky. I'd have to say that's pretty massively geeky. How about yourself, Phil?
You would sit and read the manual for a role playing game for entertainment.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess that's, you know, and that's I think that would be a little bit akin to like maybe a programmer sitting there and reading a manual on some programming language he hadn't learned yet, and just, you know, and enjoying, actually sitting in there and enjoying it. You know, there are people like that, and I guess that's pretty geeky.
Wow. Well, I will parallel some of this. I also have a large comic book collection from my childhood. I don't buy many comics now, and I don't have that many from my childhood because I parted company with many, many comics. I think I was in the seventh or eighth grade, so this was like years and years of accumulation of mostly superhero comics, although I also liked horror and sci-fi comics. But and some of my sister's Archies and stuff were probably in there too. But our family was not having a particularly we were having kind of tough times economically, and our TV went out. And it was right at the beginning of the fall TV season. Now, that used to mean something so huge. It's kind of hard to explain today. But you know, that was like there's this line in the movie you've seen, A Christmas Story.
Yeah.
Where he talks about how Christmas is the center of the whole kid year.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, the beginning of the TV season was like the great. The great solace you had about the fact that summer was over and you had to go back to school.
Yeah, well, at least you'll get some new shows on TV.
Right, you know, and yeah. It was exciting, all these new shows coming on there. Man, they might be really good this time. You know, you know, you're young enough, you could get pretty excited about a new show like Super Train or The Love Boat or something like that. So what I did was I actually ended up trading a substantial portion of my comic book collection for a television. So
well,
that my
there
family
you go.
Would have a TV.
So watch the Hulk on Friday night.
You know, that's like I want to spend that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Hulk was on, Wonder Woman. You know, the $6 Million Man. There was a lot of important TV programming that I didn't want to miss out on. I want to spend that story as what a good son, what a good brother, what a good kid, goes out and gives up his comic book collection so his family would have a TV. But the bottom line is, you want to talk about your obsessive behavior. There is no way I was missing the beginning of the TV season. Okay,
exactly. So basically, you traded one geek obsession with another in a way.
That's right. It was a tough choice, let me tell you. But I'd already read the comics. I hadn't seen the TV shows yet. It was a tough choice, and one that I regretted almost immediately and have for years regretted, except it makes a great story now. So
exactly.
So I a little bit of solace in that. But there's something else about your gaming that you didn't touch on, and I'm sorry that I'm being kind of the prosecutor here with the cross-examination. Something you mentioned to me earlier about someone else you've involved in gaming that I think bears mentioning.
Oh, yeah, too. Yeah. Here's the deal. In my dating life, I portrayed myself as very much a straight-laced kind of guy. All serious, none of this silly geekiness ever showed up while I was dating Sherilyn. But I turned the tables on her. Once I was married, I just, well, here's the deal. You've married a complete geek, and she, oh crap, What about
gotcha?
Gotcha. That's my big gotcha was. have I showed you my comic book collection?
Yeah. Now look at this. I play Dungeons and Dragons. I read comics. I can quote Star Wars lines, which, by the way, I've been saving up a bunch of them because I haven't done it the whole time we were dating, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now we've been married now going on 18 years, and slowly I've worn her down to the point that now she's actually playing Dungeons & Dragons with us. So, it's family time now,
Wow.
It's not just a bunch of sad guys, middle-aged guys, playing us, and there's another couple in the group as well. So I mean, we got two couples plus about three other folks that are playing with us. So it's a pretty good game group now.
Okay, yeah. Anybody who watches The Big Bang Theory, this is like Leonard getting Penny.
Yes,
play.
Absolutely.
I look at you guys, and that's pretty much what I see. Okay,
Leonard and Penny. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. A few years older after they've had kids, right? And So that's astounding. That is well.
Well, if you remember, Penny got involved in what was that game? It was like an online version of any rate.
World of Warcraft. Yeah,
exactly. She was playing a version of World of Warcraft and got big time into it. So it's possible. It's possible. Even the non geekiest among us can be brought in. And I've come to the realization that any room that I walk into now becomes a little geekier for me being there.
Oh, there you go. don't
the center of gravity.
Don't let that go to your head. But with great power comes great responsibility, of course. Well, the reason I wanted to go back to that was something that I can share from my own marriage, which is that my wife and I are actually now, we've got a Roku box and we watch movies off Netflix. Do you Netflix?
Absolutely. Streaming on Netflix, that's the wave of the future, by the way.
That is the bomb, man. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm not buying another DVD, I don't think, because eventually it'll all be on a streaming service like Netflix. It's awesome. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, I've actually got two Roku stories that are related to how geekiness is contagious and how people like us, you and I and our listeners here, especially in the chat room, but everyone who listens to Fast Forward Radio or anyone who reads The Speculist, we're kind of on the cutting edge of behavior that everyone else eventually adopts. It's just a matter of time before popular, beautiful girls like Sherilyn would start, playing Dungeons and Dragons. They needed the impetus of Steven to get them there. Well, likewise, my wife and I watch Farscape. We've been rewatching the entire series. We used to never miss that back when it was on Sci-Fi, and she was actually quite into it back in the day. And it was kind of a different kind of a show. It was very dark, and I think in a lot of ways it was a precursor to things we saw later develop maybe more fully in Battlestar Galactica and some of these other more serious science fiction shows. But she and I got this kind of joint interest in Farscape that eventually led to me taking her to a Farscape con, okay?
No, I need to ask, did y'all dress up?
We did not dress up.
That's disappointing.
Well, I'll tell you what. I would want to dress up as Dargo, and, man, that would be like an, you know, I don't think I can pull off John Crichton, frankly. I'd want to be Dargo. And I just, you know, the tentacles and the suit and the I've never had the I don't know if it's the budget or the patience, I think, to put something like that together. So we did not dress up. She could have dressed up like Aaron, would have been no problem. That would have been that would have been quite easy. But actually, I was surprised at the Farscape con. You know, there were people definitely there dressed up, but not as many as I would have expected. I mean, you get this image of like Comic Con. And I've never been, but I just picture that it's like everybody there has got a Stormtrooper helmet on or something, right? That they're that they're all completely dressed up. That was the only time I've actually been to a like media science fiction convention. I've been to like gatherings where they're about books, right? But never one that was devoted to a TV show before. And we actually had a blast. We had a really fun time. Have not been back since. But yeah, I felt like you know, I pushed her into a new place in the world, kind of like you've done with your wife, with Dungeons and Dragons. It just goes to show you we're the ones who are kind of leading the charge. And you know where there's a parallel to that, and we've talked about this quite frequently on the program, is there's a parallel to that in the mainstreaming of accelerating technology, accelerating change ideas. And we've looked at how words that once would have come out of the mouth only of someone like John Smart or Ray Kurzweil or one of those guys, you now hear out of, you know, the CTO of major corporations or someone like Stephen Hawking, who's a highly respected scientist, but certainly not someone that you think of as a wacky futurist type, or somebody like Matt Ridley, whose prior books had all been these serious and very interesting books on biology, who then turns around, writes a book on humanity as a species, and ends up, I think, in a lot of ways, just echoing much of what we've heard from Ray and from John and from people like that over the years about...
His book is just awesome, by the way.
Yeah,
The Rational Optimist is what we're talking about. That book is just... I think it just came out this year. It's... I think probably the finest book, you know, along these subject lines that I've seen this year for sure, and maybe in the last year or so, a year or two.
Yeah, I don't know if we've raised this point before, but folks, highly recommended book, The Rational Optimist by Matt Ridley. I cannot recommend that book highly enough. To me, it's right up there with It's Getting Better All the Time. To me, those two books are like companion pieces in terms of just kind of laying out against all bias as to how the world is supposed to work, how the world actually seems to be working.
Well, the Better All the Time book ought to be like basically the graphics for The Rational Optimist. I mean, you know.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
The Better All the Time book is almost just a picture book in a way. It's just lots of diagrams with just a minimal of explanation as showing why the world's getting better all the time. But then The Rational Optimist explains, you know, in the past a lot of people have had this idea that anyone that's rational, you know, is going to be, you know, very pessimistic about the future. Anyone who thinks about things and thinks deeply on things is going to just, you know, going to be glum. And the only optimists are those who are naive. Well, that Matt Ridley sort of takes that idea and just beats the crap out of it in the book Rational Optimist, and I love it. It's just fun to watch him deconstruct some of those ideas.
He shows how prevalent that idea is, and it's interesting. He refers to it kind of in passing, and I would like to have read more about that. If he ever decides to write a memoir, I'll definitely read it. But he talks about his own kind of intellectual journey from being a person who was convinced that the world was going to hell in a handbasket and beginning to look for all the scientific evidence for that, and stumbling upon books like Moore and Simon's It's Getting Better All the Time, and realizing that once you look at the facts, you see a completely different kind of future unfolding. You see a very different world unfolding than the one that that we've been presented and that everyone seems to buy into. It really says a lot about another topic that we talk about frequently, which is memetics. It says a lot about how powerful the pessimism is serious, cynicism is serious, meme really is. I mean, that the idea that that serious intellectual horsepower goes with a bleak view of the world is a tough one to take on. And if you ever have the opportunity just to talk to people in your regular life about these kinds of ideas, I got so excited about The Rational Optimist. I was actually on a business trip talking to one of my colleagues about this. And I don't always out myself as a crazy singularitarian all the time, but I just went for it. I explained to her everything as I see it, using a lot of examples from Ridley's book. And the resistance to the idea that the world might actually be improving was profound. And it's very similar to the kind of social resistance that people would have had to geeks, say, 20, 30 years ago. The kind of social awkwardness of people who were obsessed with technology, who were obsessed with science fiction stories, or you know whatever the obsession might be, was enough to say, you know, we don't want you in the group. We're gonna push you back. We're not including you. But those obsessions won out because they were part of the same trend that we're seeing. When we look at what's happening with the economy, what's happening with technology, the rising tide that raises all boats is making us all into sexy immortal billionaires with superpowers. But you know what we're going to be, Stephen? We're going to be very geeky sexy immortal billionaires with superpowers. I just hadn't included that one in my earlier formulations.
Well, you know, we're basically trying to be Tony Stark, and let's face it, he's a comic book character, so there you are.
That's right, and he's a total geek. I mean, exactly. You know, anybody who builds his own, like, artificial heart transplant device or whatever the heck that thing is, you know, that's that's some pretty geeky stuff.
I wanted to point out, I just put a link in the chat there to Matt Ridley's TED Talk, and that is one awesome TED Talk. It just came out today, and the title is pretty provocative. It's When Ideas Have Sex,
right?
And
which of course is one of the themes of The Rational mm-hmm. Optimist. Yeah,
that's right. I mean, it's one of the reasons he says, you know, why in the world would our species, you know, no other animal, this is something you can say about humans that can't be said of any other animal. As we've grown more in population, we have continued to grow in wealth. In other words, you know, it's like there's more and more to go around. The more and more people, the more and more individuals we have. And I think the answer to his question, you know, why? How can this be? How can it be that as we grow in population, we actually grow in wealth? He says, well, the environment for ideas to flourish and to combine and recombine grows as the mindscape grows. In other words, the more brains we have out here in the world, the more environment you have for ideas to get together and have little baby ideas.
Right,
and so that's basically the way he's going down in that talk, and you got to hear it. This guy's brilliant and a lot of fun to listen to, and check out his book too.
I think that it bears repeating that it's like our mind space is outgrowing even the numeric population. That's the bottom line. I'm trying to think of the right word for this. It's this phenomenon when the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. That he talks about very very simple examples of if you've got three people all trying to do five things versus if you have three people each doing one thing, doing it very well and exchanging with each other. that the value add is so much greater than what you would think
synergy.
Mathematically.
Synergy.
Yeah, the synergy, exactly. That's the word I was looking for. And it applies to the production of stuff, which is kind of the production and exchange of stuff, according to Matt Ridley, not to spoil the whole book for anyone who hasn't read it, but that's really what has led us to where we are, that really all of what we think of as human civilization today grows out of that. And science is a byproduct of technology, not the other way around. Culture, really our entire culture is a byproduct of commerce and technology. Basically, the entire world we live in is the product of those two things. It's technology increasing in its effectiveness and increasing in its distribution because of this synergy that occurs when people specialize and when knowledge gets distributed rather than trying to contain all the knowledge in one head. And you know what's interesting is swinging that back around to the whole geek topic is I guess that's one example where maybe that's why originally geeks didn't do so well is because they wanted to be kind of self-contained sources of knowledge, and that goes against really how progress has occurred up to now.
Right.
But the interesting thing that's happened is that our knowledge is distributed not only in our individual brains and not only in our libraries and our written documents, but now it's distributed across this vast network, the World Wide Web, and all of the all of the computers sitting in all of the living rooms and all of the bedrooms and all of the offices all around the world, and all the iPhones and BlackBerry sitting in people's pockets, that knowledge has become vastly more distributed than it ever had before. And you can't help but believe that that's going to lead to even tremendously more creation of wealth and creation of possibility than we've seen in the past. Now, in the chat room, we've got an interesting discussion going on about whether Peter Parker is a nerd or whether Batman is a nerd. And I want to go there, but before we get to that, just in case we run out of time, because you want to talk about a good geek conversation right there, right? I mean, you know, Michael Darling and I, a guy who has been on our show many times and used to be our chat host, he and I we'll have lunch together, and often as not, we end up on a whole Superman versus Batman thing. I mean, and you can imagine who takes which side. But it's just like an ongoing debate. And this is like, you know, he and I will debate politics. We'll talk about religion. We'll talk about relationships. Sure, that's all fine. But come on, let's get back to the point here, all right? And, you know, Superman, come on, he can fly. Give me a break. You know, he's invulnerable. He's got, you know. My point being that for geeks, that kind of stuff is endlessly fascinating. We could talk about those forever. In fact, I could do a weekly show on Superman versus Batman. I don't know why someone doesn't do that. But what I wanted to come back to was Matt's comment as we were talking about the phenomenon of understanding that a bleak point of view is not necessarily the correct one, understanding that the world might actually be getting better because of technology. Matt made the comment, "I wish so much I could convince my parents of this." Now, Stephen, we were talking about this earlier, and I thought you said something pretty interesting about where we are versus maybe where a generation or two back was.
Yeah, it's like this. We can speak and tell these ideas to our parents or something, and I've noticed that they don't quite get it, but they smile and they don't exactly shut me down, you know. But I could imagine trying to share these ideas with, say, my grandparents. Mm. And, I would have gotten nowhere with that. In part, I think the world changes, and as the world changes, sometimes you choose to go along for the ride, and then sometimes some people don't. They just, I'm the way I am, and I don't care, and, the world can change all around me, and I'm going to continue to live my life the way I have for the first half of my life, and you meet people like this all the time who are a little bit distrusting of where technology is taking us now.
Yeah, well, there's two ideas you run into. One has less to do with technology and probably more to do with social change, although people rope technology into it, I think yeah, inaccurately. I'm sorry?
Sometimes the social and technological change are all wrapped up together in the minds of these people.
Sure, but what you hear from some people sometimes is that nothing ever changes.
Yeah.
And you know what? You could truly say that. Actually, there's no point in human history when you could truly say that. But you were justified in saying that maybe 400 or 500 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Where you could look back at basically how people lived then and how people lived 1,000 years ago, and you could claim, yeah, we're a little bit better off, but it wasn't really all that. Nothing ever really changes. But that idea stuck. Talk about a meme that has outlived its usefulness. There are still people who say that nothing ever really changes, and I think anything post-industrial age, to maintain that one takes a certain amount of chutzpah. Okay? I mean, you really have to have your head in the sand, but you do hear it. So there's the whole, well, change doesn't matter because nothing ever really changes. You get that one sometimes. But what I see more frequently, and as I was talking about, I certainly see in my dad, and much more pronounced in his dad, is I think a kind of, as you said, a wary eye towards technological change, a deep-seated suspicion about whether the cons aren't going to outweigh the pros for any technological change that comes along. And you know, you can talk about how this is all well and good that you got your computers and your internets and interwebs and all those kinds of things, but what about reading a book? What's wrong with reading a book? You know, and then you say, well, Dad, I enjoy reading books.
Let me show you. And you pull out your iPhone and here's my Kindle app. You know, I'm reading
right.
a book.
Yeah. So my dad will ask the question. My grandpa, my papa, he would just assume that things were crap compared to how they used to be. He was a little bit like the old Dana Carvey grumpy old man character, if you remember
yeah.
if you remember him. And he was kind of a grumpy old man. He was a great guy. Don't get me wrong. I love my grandpa, but he was pretty convinced that things went downhill once they switched from radio to TV. Okay. you're not going to show him a technological innovation and have him sign up that was a good thing. A lot of this kind of romanticizing of what the pastoral life was like. We talked about that in Matt Ridley's book a couple of weeks ago. This idea that things used to be cleaner and nicer and life was easier and et cetera, et cetera. I think that idea gets a hold of people, particularly sometimes in their older age, and that's a tough one to shake.
I have a theory about that. I think that people in their older age, they start looking back on earlier times as, you know, a better time, in part because when they were younger, it was a better time. You know, I mean, their bodies were healthy and strong, and they didn't have the same frailties and weaknesses that they have that they're dealing with now. And so you begin to romanticize everything about the earlier times, even things that, you know, weren't necessarily better. You know, that time of your life is just more fun when you're healthy and strong.
Sure.
I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, I think that that the wariness towards technology, in addition to the just kind of life stage thing that we're both talking about here, but in addition to that, the wariness of technology actually comes from a valid phenomenon, which is a desire not to get too excited about things, a desire not to get fooled by the unintended consequences of something new when it comes along, and that's something that people develop with age as well. Once you've been through things a few times and you've seen people get all excited about stuff and then it doesn't work out exactly the way that was anticipated, you can certainly say, well, we're going to be cautious about being optimistic. But I think the right response is to be cautiously optimistic. What it's turned into, what culturally it's been turned into, is a rejection of technology, and I think that's completely wrong. But I said I had another Roku story, and I'll tell that now because this also involves my parents. So the Roku meme spread from my house to my sister's, and my sister got this idea that my parents don't need cable anymore. and probably they don't. She said, here, we're going to give you a digital antenna, and we're going to give you a Roku box, and we're going to pull this Comcast thing out of your TV. We'll keep the internet for now because you've got your phone running off there, but eventually we're going to get you a Vonage phone, and so you know you're going to have a phone bill. You're not going to have the cable bill anymore. That's all just going to kind of be built into this one low, you know, internet charge that you're going to be paying. So my sister, okay, who used to mock me, all right, for reading Legion of Superheroes, okay, my sister, who was a socially acceptable person when we were children and who, you know, went to great lengths to make it known to me that I was not, okay?
Yeah. You're so embarrassing, I can't take you anywhere.
Exactly, you know. She would. Well, actually, she liked me okay. It was my friends, especially, but it's another story for another time. And all that's to say that now here she is, okay, a non-geeky person, traditionally, originally, non-geeky person. She's now, like, rewired our parents' complete house, totally, right? It's like, you know, you're going to have your internet connection, but here I'm giving you TV via the internet. I'm giving you phone via the internet. I'm putting in a router. I mean, it's just really kind of amazing to think about it. 10 years ago, who ever had installed a router, you know?
Yeah.
And now my sister's doing it over at my parents' house. It kind of blows me away. But the best part of the story.
And let me ask this. Are they okay with these changes? Are your parents?
Oh, no. Well, this is where it gets really good.
Oh, okay. That's where I was really wondering about. Yeah.
Because it just didn't work.
Yeah.
She spent hours and hours and hours and could not get the Roku going. And she kept the internet going, but that was all they had, and then got the phones going again. But, you know, she was there, like, all day Saturday, and she sends me this text message Saturday night. It's like, I don't know what's going on. If you could come take a look at it. So you see how things have changed, okay? Now, you know, the young Padawan comes
turned
to the master. That's right, you know, that's right. So I am called on with all my Jedi geek skills to come over and fix things at my parents'. And, you know, I couldn't do it. I got over there, and they have this Comcast cable modem. I don't want to talk bad about any one particular service provider, but I got rid of Comcast a long time ago myself, okay? I'm just saying. So they had this Comcast cable modem, and it had the phone coming out of it, and it had the Roku coming out of it. I'm scratching my head. I'm going, you know, it's all going through the router. Everything looks like it should work. And then you start thinking about crazy things. It's like, well, is that cable too long? They didn't have a wireless. They didn't have a wireless router. It was just a regular router. I'm going, is that cable too long to push that high bandwidth signal to the Roku? Because we're getting internet just fine here on the computer. So I moved everything. I moved the cable modem all of it close to the TV and had the computer connection over there, and got it all working. Hey, Roku works, phone works. Now the computer won't work. And left them like that. I'm like, okay, you guys are good. We'll come back to this, all right? And it occurred to me as I was leaving, my mom pointed out that this ancient Comcast cable modem required not only an Ethernet connection to the computer, but also a USB connection to the computer, which should be extraneous, but in their case, it was not extraneous. It was required. So I said, that's fine. I got a great big long USB cable at home, and I brought it the next day, hooked everything up. Now everything should work perfectly. And the computer worked, but the Roku didn't. So
time for a new modem, I think.
I actually think it's the router. But then something else occurred to me. Well, the first thing was, after I had screwed up their TV, I had my brother pick my dad up so he could watch the All-Star game last night, because I was like, geez, we've killed their cable, and I was going to get him in MLB.com on Netflix, but we can't do it because the Roku doesn't work. So, you know, my dad gets to watch the All-Star game after all. And long story short, I've taken it to the highest authority, right? The Padawan went to the Jedi Master. Well, now I'm going to Yoda himself, and we're sending the Geek Squad over to fix the whole thing. So
there you go.
there's a hierarchy of geek, from my sister to me, and then finally the paid professionals. But I had mentioned, you know, it's interesting that we live in a world that has that organization, and there they are. They're almost like superheroes.
Yeah. and the show Chuck, they're referred to as the Nerd Herd.
Exactly, yeah.
Obviously, it's the Geek Squad is what they are. Well, that's awesome. any rate, I wanted to bring up one more idea from that TED Talk that I had mentioned earlier and linked to earlier. It's the idea that we already have, in a way, greater than human intelligence. And basically he's pointing again to distributed knowledge. For example, it would have been great to have had some more of that distributed knowledge being applied to the problem you guys had at hand. Because nobody has the full picture anymore. I mean, does any one person in the world know how to make a computer mouse? I mean, no. I mean, because, you have some people that go and get the oil out of the ground to make the plastic, and then you have other people that, just do one thing on the line to install this a little piece of the circuit board that goes in the mouse, and then there's the laser all these different things that go into a mouse that it's insane, and that's just actually kind of by comparison to some of the things, it's not all that complex. And so there you are.
Compared to all the other devices you got hooked to your computer, which are much more complicated. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's pretty much our entire world now is distributed to the point that no one person trying to be self-sufficient in this world now is sort of a it always was. I mean, the idea of being completely self-sufficient always was a little biting off a little bit more than you could chew. But and now it'd be really tough. It'd be really, really tough.
Well, and I think the interesting lesson learned from Ridley's book is that greater than human intelligence emerged as soon as two human beings started thinking about two different things at the same time and sharing the knowledge with each other. That really this greater than human intelligence is the intelligence that's been kind of distributed out amongst all of us through the specialization that we've done. And this is kind of, my sister went in, she was going to be the hero. She couldn't, but so she went to, another source of knowledge, and I'm no good either, but it's like, in this case you go, oh, well, wait, there's another source. Now, no doubt the Geek Squad guy is going to show up and he's going to take one look at it and go, oh, well, this, and he's going to hit one thing and boom, everything's going to work. But, even if he doesn't, even if it's a stumper for him, in his speed dial, he's got 15 other people who one of them will have the answer, right? Because the knowledge is sitting out there somewhere.
They'll pull up in their Volkswagen Bug and with a Geek Squad on the side, and it'll all be good. So
that's right. It'll all work out. Not only is the hero of the story distributed human knowledge, but the real hero is the geek who shows up and saves the day. So on that heroic note, what music did you select for us on our Celebrate Geekness Day?
The artist is Jody Shelton, and the song is All These Sounds.
All These Sounds by Jody Shelton. All right. Well, Stephen, as always, have enjoyed talking with you this evening. Thanks a lot for putting the music together and for all your contributions to the program. Thanks to everyone in the chat room and everyone listening to the program live. We will be back again next week at the normal time, and everyone who listens to the program via recording. Thanks to all of you for being part of Fast Forward Radio. And until next time, live to see it.
about this.